So this is the board of listers, and what will happen is we'll go around the room, introduce ourselves for the record, and then you'll have 15 minutes to state what you think the value should be and why. All right. And then the board will have some questions, or may not have questions for you. They will recess and go into deliberation, and they'll make a decision on what they feel the value should change or not change. And then the town of Colchester will send you a notice. It's called a result of grievance notice with their decision. All right, and that'll be within 14 days of the close of the hearing. So if we're closing hearings July 8th, it'll be 14 days after that. But typically we do it as soon as we can. Okay? All right, so let's go around the room and introduce ourselves.
I'm Charlotte Gardner. I'm Angela McDonald.
Robert Vickery.
Jerry Barrows.
Andrew Rich.
Heather Feldman.
Cameron Feldman.
That was very fast, and I was trying to write everything down. I wrote Charlotte and Angela.
I can get you anything you don't have.
Bob, you've got Bob. Jerry, Gerri. Thank you.
Perfect. Thank you.
Okay, so you have 15 minutes.
We have sent in a presentation. I see that there are printed copies. Does everybody have one?
Yes.
Thank you for distributing those. We have not done this before, and so if we seem a little bit amateurish, please forgive us. We have determined a range based off of three different factors to try to set where we think, you know, an ideal range would be for our home. The first was using an adjusted fair market value. Go ahead, Heather.
Yeah, so this was starting at the previous assessment, which was in 2011, and then going through when we bought the house, when it was sold to us, and also an appraisal that happened at the same time, and also an appraisal we had later when we had solar panels installed, and then adjusted it using the house price index for the Burlington area. And those all came out between 1.25 and 1.36 million.
So
the largest one being the one that was from the earliest time point, so the 2011, the highest time point when it was adjusted for. One feedback that Cameron got when we went to the next round of appeals was that this Burlington area house price index may not be accurate for Colchester. So the best that we had for Colchester was to use the average value from one assessment to this one, so that 94% from the 2011 versus the 2026. And using that as the adjusted value, that came out to 1.29 million.
That's on page three. Mm-hmm. We understood that that sometimes to determine fair market value, it may be more appropriate to use a list of comparables. And so we had endeavored to try to find what would be the appropriate comparables with some considerations. Some of those considerations are we do have a very high cost of ownership for our home. We live on a mile and a half long private road, which we need to maintain ourselves. We do have more information on that for later on, but for now it's just something to keep in mind. We are adjacent to the waterfront. We technically are on the water. However, there are some, it is a little bit of a problematic comparison because we're not like one of the homes on the water with a walkable beach. And so if you were to look at a slide that we have later, you'll see what I mean.
We can do it when we get to it.
Yeah. The last time this property was sold, it was on the market for almost 3 years. They had listed it, they had taken it off, they had relisted it. Go ahead.
We don't actually know the exact timing. We couldn't find the history of it, but it did have the first time it changed in 2017 was a price change. So it was listed at some point before then.
Yep.
And it was a very tough property to sell just because it's not an easy place to live. It's an amazing place to live, but not an easy place to live.
Absolutely. So the comparable properties that we used are on slide, I think it's five. You'll see a picture of Mallet's Bay, and then opposite that you'll have, yes, that's exactly the
arrows showing where they are.
Yeah. And so these properties that we chose as comparables, we thought had the appropriate number of either bedroom, square footage, and proximity to the lake. So we were comparing ourselves against these five properties. They were all sold in the last 12 months or close to the last 12 months. And for each one of these comparables, we have a full slide on it in case you had questions on whether or not that was a fair comparable, and we could talk about the details of it. But using that, the average sale price, and like I said, these were all very recent sales, was $1.05 million. So a pretty significant departure from the $1.7 million that we had been assessed at. So we thought that these were fair comparables. I don't know if you guys had an appetite to go into the specific details of these properties, but they all had their own unique history and sales prices. Do you guys want to go into those?
It's your 15 minutes.
Okay, let's skip ahead. If you can go to the image where it's got a picture of the Cliff Road Hilltop with some property lines drawn on it. Yes, thank you. So you can see that the water frontage is a little bit problematic. So we do live on a cliff. And the property line technically has water frontage, although it's not accessible. So there is no safe way of traveling down to the water's edge for us. We believe that this property was designed in this way after carving out 262 Cliff to be able to maintain the view, so that way we could rightfully clear the path in front of the house, but not for maintaining any level of frontage or access to the lake. From there, I also drew, you can see with the orange line, which might not come through, but the road that's with the dashed line across it, yes. We are opposite the road from the lake. And so the list of comparables that we showed were also, some of them were on the water, but most of them were a house opposite the street. And we think that this is a fair comparison because for all intents and purposes, we are opposite the street from the lake with two very strange carved out exceptions. And by contrast, we don't have access to any of our neighbors' beaches. The third comparison, there are a number of different real estate companies that pride themselves on being able to have their own proprietary formula on how they calculate value. And we had just taken a sampling of those properties, right? So we used Trulia, realestate.com, Redfin, Zillow, and the average of those was inside of the range bracketed by the list of comparables and the time-adjusted value of their property based on professional assessments or property sold history. And so 1.152 was that valuation, and as I mentioned, that is directly inside the range that we had provided.
And they were pretty tight with each other, being they were compared to the previous selling price. I'll talk about the other stuff. You talked about the high cost ownership.
Okay. So as I mentioned, the property is a mile and a half long private road, right? And so to maintain that road, it requires an absolute monstrous amount of work. All of the time, not all the time, but every time I drive down the road, I'm noticing ditches filling up, I'm noticing potholes, we have a culvert that beavers like to plug up, and so there's concerns a couple times a year that it's gonna flood, so we have to hire beaver trappers, which can be, sometimes even just working with the animal control people can be a little bit problematic.
We had a huge amount of damage to the road occur when Velco was doing the power lines through it. We had to personally
invest a lot of time in cataloging the damage that had been done, in taking them to arbitration and then reaching a settlement. And, you know, the settlement did not include recompensating us for the time that we had spent doing that. We also have to maintain potholes. Sometimes trees will fall across the road at inopportune times, and there's nobody that's going to come and clear that tree for us, right? So we would have to go and do that. And I have a funny story about it, which I will save you from unless we have lots of extra time. But this is a burden that a lot of new homeowners aren't willing to undertake. That means that that's something that they're going to have to do themselves. And we are a member of a community, but a lot of our community members have differing amounts of participation that they feel comfortable with. Some of them are elderly. Some of them don't have the ability or the financial means to participate or support the cost of the ownership of the road, so that burden is left to those who can. And I'm very proud to be a strong young man who can actually do a lot of the work that's necessary, but it is a significant time burden. We have what's called pothole parties. And in pothole parties, we get whoever we can from the neighborhood to help fill those potholes, which means we have to order fill. I had to buy a tractor just so I can carry the fill to the road where it's needed. And this is something that is pretty significant. The table that I have listed there is an annual breakdown of what the cost of maintaining this road is. And this would be
let's just speed it up a bit.
Yeah, right, we got time to consider it.
But yeah, that's a range of what you might see. They're also for town services in general. They're more limited than what you see for most parts of the town. So the road is not maintained. There's no street cleaning on our dirt road. Poor coverage by utilities. There wasn't internet for a very, very long time. And now there's only one option if you want to have wired internet. There's no school bus pickup, which is very, you know, as we have three young kids that are in the school systems here, like we spend a lot of time driving up and down the road that a lot of people wouldn't want to do that. And there's also preconditions on the police, fire, and rescue services, which can be a big barrier to somebody who wants to buy this house and bring down the fair market value. Also, thinking about the value and comparing it versus 2011 and the last sale, it's a very hard property to maintain. It's constantly exposed to the elements, and we do have three young children, and we have not been able to maintain it as to the level that it's been previously maintained at. So there's been various leaks within the roof, which we have been working on fixing, but they're not all fixed as of this point in time. The deck, which is a beautiful deck, is rotting in multiple holes, and it just needs a lot of maintenance right now, and it's certainly not of the level it would be if you were trying to sell it for a good market value. And this, obviously, we don't know the final tax rates as of this point, but just looking at how much it will have changed versus when we bought it, and presuming that 94% number stays and it ends up being proportionate, we'd be looking at over 60% increase over what it was when we bought the property just 6 years ago.
So based on that, we've provided a range based on a variety of different methods of coming up with what we determined to be fair market value. And from that range, we think that we have adequately demonstrated that the cost of ownership is high, and so we should be compared on the low end of that range, because that range that I provided doesn't take into account that cost of ownership or the condition of the home. It is it would be an idealized market value. And so we feel like we would like to propose the valuation of $1.05 million or in that range to be the valuation of 109 Cliff Road. We have, so that's the end of our official presentation. We didn't go into the list of comparables if you guys had an appetite for that. And in the backup, I had noticed some items that were just little clerical errors for the vision card.
One other important point that we said yet was since the last time this house was sold, it's also been shifted from being able to be called a four bedroom to only a three bedroom. So all of those comparables in that range was done with a four bedroom designation, whereas now it's considered a three bedroom.
So you found some mistakes on the vision card. Mm-hmm. I see a heat pump in the upstairs. Is there not one?
There is no heat pump.
Okay. And then you also circled.
I think we made all those corrections when you came in with me the first time.
Okay.
Heat pump, bedroom, and that solar panel. It wasn't being assessed, but it was in the appraised column. So I fixed all that.
I'm glad to hear that. So when I presented this to you, I was hoping that we would be able to lower the valuation. And it sounded like, from my conversations with Bob, that wasn't something that at that round we felt comfortable changing.
But for what?
The value.
It looks like it changed, though, from 1.697 to 1.612.
Okay. So that's
that might be just the solar panels and the other
solar panels
and the bathroom count.
Andrew had absolutely noted that the solar panels had been added and helped remove those. So that was a good pickup on his point. I had missed it.
Yeah, and this isn't necessarily an error, but one area that we saw a lot of discrepancy when comparing this to other vision cards was in the valuation of the waterfront. For example, we had a condition of one where there's a lot of other places that had sandy beaches that were lower condition value, and also the unit price was significantly higher than the other surrounding properties, similar properties. So this was seemed like it was very much out of scale with the other properties of the area, especially given the condition.
Just to help you understand the condition factors, the neighborhood factor takes into account the frontage and the area that you're in. So the fact that the town doesn't maintain the road after the interstate That's part of that neighborhood factor. So we're looking at the sales in that area, assuming that the sales are going to take that into account, that the town road is not maintained, that there's no bus services down the road, and those sale prices. So that's where the neighborhood factor comes in. And when we apply the condition factor, that's within a neighborhood. We're comparing your lot to your neighbor's lots within the in the neighborhood. The site factor is comparing your site within the town as well. So this neighborhood is within the town, and the differences between each neighborhood and the site is your site comparing other sites, and then the condition is within that neighborhood. So we're able to adjust. So if you're wetland, that's going to have a condition factor of, you know, 0.1 or 0.5. If you were, all your neighbors had sandy beaches and you had a cliff, we'd have a condition factor on your frontage, okay? But most of your neighbors have cliff, so that condition factor is not as high as somewhere else you might find in another part of the town. Does that help explain it? So it's not comparable throughout the town, but within the neighborhood.
Okay.
And the dollars per foot of frontage is
adjusted. Also variable. It's between. That's adjusted based on the condition and the neighborhood. So the neighborhood really affects that price per front foot.
Right. So we have many neighbors with a lower price per foot, per foot of frontage, and the same condition factor. Mm-hmm. So how do I reconcile that difference?
So there's also, because some of your neighbors have more frontage, they're going to have a lower price per front foot. So there's economies of scale working in that situation. So, you know, if you've got 500 feet of frontage, your price per front foot is going to be less than if you have 50 feet of frontage. But the overall value will be lower for the 50 feet of frontage.
You back into the dollars per foot of frontage from, so the valuation, I think, on our frontage was $344,000. And so the dollars per foot of frontage and the condition factor are backed in based on the number of feet we have.
I don't know if I understand what you mean by backed in.
You start with the $344,000 land value, and then you divide that by the condition factor and the feet of frontage. In our case, it's 90 feet of frontage to get that dollars per frontage.
So your 90 feet of frontage is going to tell us, based on what our price per front foot is throughout the town. Okay, there's a scale of that based on the size. So if on average we have 100 feet of frontage is the average, so you got a 1.20 multiplier on that scale. Okay, if you're less than that, that multiplier goes to 1.1, 1.2, 1.3 as you get smaller in size. As you get larger in size, that multiplier goes to 0.9, 0.85, whatever, on that base price per front foot on the average, which I believe is, I can't think of it off the top of my head, but so that's how it works, and it's a scale. Okay, so the overall value ends up being greater for the more frontage, but it's the price per front foot goes down as you get more feet. So if you think about it, like I have 100 feet of frontage, I'm gonna pay $400,000 for that. My neighbor has 150 feet of frontage, they're gonna pay $450,000 for that. That extra amount of frontage is not equal on a price per frontage basis. Okay, so that's how it works. That scale is applied to everybody equally throughout the town. Okay, and then we adjust for the neighborhood factor, for where you're located in town. Site factor doesn't apply to the frontage, but then a condition factor based on your condition compared to the neighbors. So that's how it's done. We don't necessarily back into it. We don't think what your value is and then back into it. Well, with those factors, we say,
yeah,
this is what the average is based on sales. We apply your data to that scale.
We didn't spend too much time trying to poke holes in the vision cards. Frankly, it's kind of opaque what exactly is being assessed at each one of these steps, like what it means by condition, what it means by that. We really focus on what in the FAQs it says, which is the price which the property will bring in the market when offered for sale and purchased by another. And
absolutely.
In our opinion, this number does not accurately reflect that. So we can certainly focus on like what we do think the market value is, but I think if we're trying to poke holes in the vision card, that's gonna be hard for us because we just don't understand.
No, and that's the it's a, just a model, and we're just applying your data to the model. That model isn't perfect for every single situation, you know. So this is why we have these meetings. This is why we allow people to review their assessment and to say, I disagree with it. I think it should be this, because every property is unique, and we want to make adjustments. The model is just a mathematical formula, and it's blind to certain conditions of certain properties. Okay.
And I think we're happy to answer questions. And
have you done it? So you've added a shed. Is that all you've done for additions to the property?
Yes.
Other than take care of the road.
Yeah.
And when you purchased, did you have a private road agreement drafted by the attorneys?
It's a right of way that it's deeded into the properties at the end of the road, and so.
And there's an HOA that covers.
There is an HOA.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The entire purpose of the HOA, I think, is just for the care and maintenance of the road.
Sure. But you're stating for the record that there's some people that aren't doing their fair share of the HOA.
We are generous, I think, in that, you know, we say, hey, we're having a pothole party if anybody can join us. But I understand that I have a lot of neighbors who are just physically unable to help shovel.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's quite a few part-time homes out there.
Yes, there's also a lot of camps. Right. Yeah. I think it's about 2/3 seasonal homes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And does your annual cost, is that based on the HOA payments, or is that on top of the HOA payments?
We have a spreadsheet that we maintain for all of the different services that we do on the road, when we're doing ditching, when we're doing brush hogging along the sides, if we have to fill potholes, if we have to log trees, or if we have to do any debris cleanup. And so that we catalog who came, how many hours were spent, and what materials were used, and what equipment was used. And so when we were to extrapolate that, if we were to have to outsource or subcontract it, these costs would be, this would be the range. And over a 5-year period, we have a pretty good data set on what those costs would be. And frankly, while I would love to outsource this, we have tried to find subcontractors who would manage our property, but they are unwilling. And it's just difficult to find somebody who has the time and availability to maintain this at a price point that we think is fair.
So you maintain it, and then you charge the HOA your fees to maintain?
We negotiate with the HOA for what is the fair fee. And so the HOA has set that at $600 per family. We would like to make it higher and then deduct the value for families who participate, but that hasn't been approved, and it's been pushed back pretty hard against.
Well, you're dealing with people that have been there a long time.
A very long time, and very content.
Yes, I'm sure.
Yeah, I think sometimes static momentum is the greatest momentum to overcome, right?
When you purchased the property, did you have a property inspection done?
We did.
And what do you recall was the biggest concern?
The roof was the biggest concern. We've had to replace our water pump. We've had to replace some of just the water filtration system that was in the house. We've had to replace the hot water heater. Some of those, you know, were certainly due.
Called out.
Yeah, mm-hmm. but these were pointed out to us at the time we purchased
the
home.
Right.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of these that things are just the end of their lifespan. So there's air and air conditioning unit, for example, that's kind of the point where it can be maintained. There's the heating system is very old, like. Mm-hmm.
It's so old, we bought a Nest thermostat so we could have like smart updates and do it on our phone, but it was incompatible with our furnace because it was so old.
That's the cigar furnace.
And then
we
tried
the same
to
thing.
Get contractors to come out, and the first contractor somehow broke the thermostat, so even the old thermostat wouldn't work anymore, and we had no heat, no air conditioning for months. And then we had to undo all of that, which we had eventually after three, I don't remember, I contacted three, but Heather was the one who found the person who was able to fix it. So now we have a nice, simple, not smart thermostat.
Yeah. We got a Nest for Christmas. My brother gave it to us. It just wasn't compatible.
There's possibility.
There's like a fourth wire you need.
Yeah. I actually even started to like learn how to wire LAN networks, and I go cross-eyed. I somehow I was able to do it.
One additional note on the road, just wanted to clarify, you said the town maintains through the interstate. They plow, but not maintain, like they don't do any of the potholes or no regrading, no.
Right, and so I guess, I don't know if when my card was printed off here, but I'm showing that you have central air.
That was one of the corrections we made.
Okay.
And the central air only works through the first and second floors. It doesn't work through the entire house.
And it cannot be maintained, so if it breaks, it's...
Okay. And do you have a cost on your replacing the roof? Have you got a quote on that?
We have several quotes. They were ranging between $30,000 and $80,000, depending on if we wanted to go with asphalt shingles or metal roofing.
$30,000 to $80,000, you said? $30,000 to $80,000, yeah.
And we're in contact with the insurance company, hoping that we can find reasons why they might help share that burden.
It's windy. It's windy up there.
It's very windy.
Yeah. One of the first things that we did was we installed a weather station. And so we put a weather station up there. And so about four or five times a year, we get 70 mile an hour winds because the wind comes across the lake completely uninhibited and hits the cliffs and goes up and then it hits our house. Wow. And so it hits our house from underneath. And so we get some really unique phenomena at our house. Water comes in from almost underneath and sideways. Mm-hmm.
Did you get a price on the deck?
I did, but we are not in alignment on what the appropriate path forward is. So one of the observations was that the ledger board where the deck was attached to the home wasn't properly sealed, and so that's why it's pulling away, and that's why it's having some leakage issues.
Yeah, that's the upper deck.
That's the upper deck. I would like to do a low-maintenance permanent solution, and Heather, I think, would like to do piecemeal. It's a very practical approach where we just... And so what we've been doing is we've replaced the boards as needed, but we're going to need something to address the pulling out.
But you looked into how much it would be to redo all the decking on the entire deck. Do you remember about what that was?
Yeah, it was about $35,000. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that would just to replace it with wood again. And I would like to do something a little bit more.
Pressure treated,
yes. Mm-hmm. And I would like to do something more like
Trex
composite decking or Tanzanite, something that we're not going to have to replace again in 15 or 20 years.
Any more questions?
Nope.
No.
Thanks for being
very good presentation.
Thank you very much for your time. I appreciate you guys spending your time to listen to us. And,
yeah, no problem.
And printing is also in advance, made it a lot easier for us. I printed one copy.
Yeah, I got you.
Yeah, thank you. Were there no other questions?
No other questions.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
After this, we just leave, right?
So the board's going to deliberate, and you'll get a notice from the town with the result of grievance notices. It's 14 days at the end of the closing is our statutory deadline, but we always send them out way before that. So, all right.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.